Hare Krishna. So with that lead-in, I actually had something I was going to say today, but with your lead-in about Maharaj Parikit, Sukadeva Goswami preparing for the time of death, it made it a little easier. Because today, January 28th, was my wife's birthday today. She would have been 58, but she departed April 23rd last year. And back in 2008, it was July, we were traveling around going to festivals in the summertime, and we wound up at the Baltic Sea Festival. And that was the first time Devaki Mataji invited us to go to Bangladesh Festival during Lord Nityananda's appearance day for 5 days. And when she asked us, Amekala said, she said, I had a dream. Prabhupada appeared in a dream last night. And she said, it's only the third dream I've had about Srila Prabhupada in my whole life. And she said, Prabhupada said to me, there's not much time left, so you have to accept all invitations to travel and preach. And then we just looked at each other and we're like, well, what does that mean? And she said, well, maybe a war is coming and we're not going to be able to fly around. Maybe the economy will collapse. We'll not be able to leave the country. And then she just looked at me and she said, or maybe we'll be gone. And then we're like, nah, that can't happen. She was 55, healthy. I was 57, thought I was healthy. And so anyway, we did it that time. We took it very seriously, and that was July 2008. So we kept traveling, going to temples, Eastern Europe, went to Russia. And then in January, we thought she had a torn ligament. And she wound up in bed from January of 2009 for an entire year, and it got worse and worse, but we never realized what it was. And we would travel a little bit, but it finally stopped at Janmashtami time. So that was September. So we kept traveling, even though she was sore. And after the trip, she just had to go home and lie in bed. So then finally, just at the beginning of 2010, she went in the hospital. We found out she had lymphatic cancer. And it was at this point, it was already all throughout her body. It was stage 4. Her pelvis was fracturing. And they said, chemotherapy or die? And this is, they do that in hospitals, you know. So we just looked at each other, and who'd always said to one another, that was Prabhupada's other mantra, don't take me to the hospital. So that was ours as well. But then we looked at each other and thought, well, give it a shot. So she did that. That was on January 8th. So it was 2 weeks later in that week. And she was already so weak because she had had it for so long that she was lying in bed and she developed septicemia, which was a blood poisoning. So she wasn't into taking, after the chemotherapy, she wouldn't do that anymore. She just thought whatever happens, she was going to try to holistically deal with it. And she started to run this fever. It was like January 20th, just about 1 year ago. And supposedly when your fever got to 38 degrees, they said come right to the hospital, because your whole immune system is gone, you know, because of the chemotherapy. So she didn't like me to take her temperature, you know. And I had a way, I used to just put my head on her forehead. I'd give her a kiss on the forehead, and that's how I would have to take her temperature, because she didn't care at this point, you know. So anyway, it got really hot. So it was up to 40 degrees. And of course she just looked at me and said, I don't want to go to the hospital. She said, I'm done. She said, call the devotees. So this is at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So this is 5 in the afternoon. So within the next 2 hours, there's about 80 devotees in our little townhouse there in England, you know. And they're chanting in all the rooms, kirtan's going on, and she's speaking with devotees. But she had this really bad fever, and she was completely dehydrated. But her eyes were like, she was glowing, you know. know, she was already out of her body. And she was greeting everyone. People were coming in. Everyone thought they were saying goodbye to her. And then it just got so busy, and she's in this little room. So I just closed the door. There were just a few of us in there. And she closed her eyes, and she starts laughing. And then she opened her eyes. And I said, "What are you laughing about?" She said, "Oh, I don't know." She said, "I think I was in Mayapur somewhere." She said, "Very beautiful." I saw two young boys. She said, "Very beautiful boys. They were playing." She said, "I don't know who they were." She said, "Maybe it was Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda." She said, "But they were just playing and laughing." And then they looked at me and laughed. And they started to run away and said, "It's not your time. We'll be back." And I said, "Oh, okay." So at that time I thought, better get a pen and paper. So I started writing down. So then we're sitting there, and again, her eyes closed, and she just went in. And then she's giggling. So then she opens her eyes. And I said, "What happened?" She said, "I just saw Prabhupada." She said, "He was just like that." She said, "Standing." She said, "And he had so many garlands on." She said, "Beautiful gardenias and roses, red roses." She said, "And he just smiled at me." She said, "And when he smiled at me," she said, "I realized that he loved me." She said, "I never thought Prabhupada loved me." She said, "I thought he was disgusted with me." She was a devotee for 40 years. She said, "But Prabhupada loves me." So then she was just getting more peaceful, more ready to go. So then again, she went externally unconscious. And again, she's smiling, she's just laughing. And she opened her eyes. I said, "What happened?" She said, "Oh, I don't know." She said, "It was a beautiful place." She said, "And I saw a little blue boy." She didn't say she saw Krishna. She said didn't speak like that. She said, "I just saw a blue boy." She said, "And he did the same thing as the other two. He just started laughing and ran away and said, 'It's not time.'" And then she woke up. So over the next 4 hours, two doctors came. Everyone's trying to convince her to go to the hospital. And she just said, "Don't want to go." And she looked at me, said, "Don't let them take me to the hospital." And I said, "Whatever you want." She had been in pain for months and months. So then her sons got involved, and they were determined, you know, they weren't ready to see their mother go. They hadn't been with her for all the time that I had seen everything she had been through. I didn't know what else to do. So, as it worked out, she wound up going to the hospital. And, because she had an infection, so they took the infection down with some very heavy antibiotic. It's what they use when you have anthrax and things like that. So they just, her body, which was already completely gone, they just gave her more antibiotics to kill the infection in her body. And it did. And that was like midnight she went into the hospital. So now it's like 10 o'clock in the morning. And she finally opens her eyes again. And we're surrounding her. There's all her family members. We're around her, about 8 of us. And her fever had gone up to 42 degrees. 42.2, which is 108 degrees, which is really kind of unheard of, but that's what they monitored it at. It was 108 degrees, 42.2 degrees. So then she came. So then when she opened her eyes, it was, as I had seen her over the months, really kind of detaching. Krishna was just pulling her, you know. Now she opened her eyes, and she was talking to us, but she was somewhere else. She had been somewhere else. And as soon as she looked at us, she said, "I have relevance." It was the funniest thing that she said. She said, I'm relevant. She said, I deserve. She said, because Krishna loves me. So she came out of all this feeling that Prabhupada and Krishna loved her, which she never felt worthy of her whole life, that she was a lovable person. But she said, I deserve, she said, because Krishna loves me. And then she looked at us. She said, if Krishna didn't love us, why would he go through so much trouble to try to bring us back home, back to Godhead? She said, he loves us. And then she said, we're not in control. She said, Krishna's in control. And she kept saying it. She said, we're not the controllers. She said, Krishna's the controller. She said, but I'm a little stubborn. And she smiled. Then she heard all the things she was saying. She said, I'm nothing. She said, and I don't want anyone to think I'm anything. But she was just really somewhere gone. She had come back, had so many realizations. And then we're all just looking at her, you know, with these kind of long faces, feeling horrible, you know. We could see she was going soon. And then she looked at us, she said, don't feel sorry for me. She said, I feel sorry for all of you. She said, I'm finished suffering. She said, but you're all going to have to go through this. She said, I feel sorry for you. And that's how she did it her whole time. She was so wonderful. She never looked for sympathy. She never felt sorry for herself. She could never even take painkillers for over a year because her body couldn't handle codeine and couldn't handle the liquid morphine. She would become constipated and nauseated. So she just dealt with it. So then she went on for 3 more months before she finally left her body for 3 months, and the pain just got so bad. So then when she finally left Radhanaswami, he made it all the way from India by way of Africa to England while the airports were closed for 5 days because of the volcano that went off in Iceland. There wasn't a plane in England for 5 days, so they just opened the airports and all the flights were backed up for like weeks. You know, one couldn't get a flight, but he managed to get a private flight with someone. So he came as well for her leaving. And she left just before 6 a.m. during the month of Purushottama, so which is the most auspicious month in the calendar, and 3 years in the Veda calendar, Vaishnava calendar. And Patit did her departure chart. So he said the time that she left was the time when Bhishmadev, it was the time he picked to leave his body on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And of course he performed his austerities. He laid on a bed of arrows, you know, so that he could leave, pick his time to leave. So when I read this, he sent me an email. When I read it, I immediately thought of her lying in bed for 6 months in intense pain. And as the only thing she would say sometimes was, I must have done some really bad things, she said. Must have done some really bad things in my previous life, she said, to have all this pain. But she kept doing service right up until the end. Actually, we were listening to the transcriptions of Prabhupada's lectures, his audio tapes that the archives hadn't published yet. So together we'd listen to them and make corrections in the transcriptions, because many times they get words a little wrong, they hear things wrong, or they don't hear things, they'll just put indistinct and you try to find them. So this is what we would do over the final months. I'd sit in bed with her and we'd listen to Prabhupada speak and do that. But Prabhupada made all arrangements for her. Krishna made all arrangements for her because she dedicated her life. She took care of devotees. It was always what she liked to do, was to serve the devotees, especially the ladies and the children. She was always fighting for rights for the children and the ladies. And the congregation, all the ISKCON members, like at the manor, she would arrange festivals. And she said to me before she left, a few weeks before she left, she said, so if I die, she said, I want a big festival at the manor. She said, so all the devotees can come, all the Prabhupada disciples come back to the manor. It's what she always did. It was the same thing. She said, so if I die, she said, have a big festival so the devotees will come back to the manor again, see the deities and chant. She said, and I want a big ISKCON feast. She said, Bala Gopal, her god sister, she said she can be in charge of cooking it. She said, because I want all the devotees to have a nice feast. She said, in ghee. She said, make sure it's cooked in ghee. And then she looked at me and said, and don't be cheap. She knew me very well. I said, no, I said, I won't be cheap. You know, I said, okay, we'll take care of that. And then she said what songs to play at her cremation, everything. Put her ashes in the Jamuna. And then she just dropped the subject. That was it. She never discussed it. And she always tried to get better. She had very good attitude. She said, I'm not dying with cancer. She said, I'm living with cancer. But she knew she was going. And her body just disintegrated. But she never complained. This is described in Nectar of Devotion. It says, a person who accepts their suffering and renders devotional service, always thinking that I deserve so much more, but Krishna, he's given me some token punishment. He said, for that person, path home back to Godhead is guaranteed. And they just continue doing their service. So this is what she did. She wasn't a perfect person, but she was a wonderful devotee. And she was completely chaste to Srila Prabhupada. Never, all she wanted to do was serve Prabhupada and his devotees. And Prabhupada told her, that was his instruction, was to travel and preach, because there's not much time left. He didn't appear to her and say, there's not much time left, go to Vrindavan, chant Hare Krishna, get ready. He said, travel and preach, accept all invitations. Because we used to get invitations and we'd go here, should we go there? So he said, go everywhere, accept all invitations to travel and preach. So when I look back, I thought, what a wonderful instruction that Prabhupada had given her. She was already doing what she needed to do. She didn't have to do anything different. So it meant her life was successful. Because she just wanted her husband to travel all around the world and glorify Srila Prabhupada. For her, that was the best thing that we could both do. So that's what we did at that time. So anyway, today was her birthday, so I thought, an opportunity to speak about her a little bit. She was a very wonderful devotee. So, any questions for Maharaj, myself? Yours was so light. Mine was so heavy. But this is what's coming for all of us. Huh? And this is what she said so practically. Don't feel sorry for me. But this is the test that we all have to get. And it's the same thing Prabhupada said. Like Maharaj was saying, yeah, when interesting Prabhupada, when people would come, Prabhupada would ask us how we were doing. Even he could barely move in the bed as soon as you would arrive. He'd say, how are you doing? Have you gotten prasadam? Do you have a nice place to stay? He was always thinking of everyone else. But he also said, don't think this won't happen to you. This is what happens. This is the process of that birth, old age, disease, and death. But even Prabhupada came, and he also left that open. And it was so what Prabhupada would say. Because he would always, when he talked to me, he would always say things. Always there's choices. He never just gives you ultimatums. You should do this, do this. There's always this opportunity. It's voluntary business. Huh? We either can choose to serve Krishna or we choose to serve Maya. Those options are always there. So his statement was very, there's not much time left. We couldn't quite figure out what it meant. And I never even, neither of us remembered it until I saw Devaki just a few months ago and she had written it into her diary. So she sent it to me, this little diary installment. And then I remembered it so well, the conversation. But Prabhupada's message is clear to all of us. His society, his ISKCON society. It's for preaching. It's our business all the time in whatever state of life. Somehow or other, we have to preach this message of Krishna consciousness. Maharaj was saying it. explain to people this illusion they have everyone in. Someone gave me a statistic here in Australia, 1/3 of the people on antidepressants. And this is what society does all over the world. Just keep people sedated so that they think everything's okay. Because nothing is okay. Like you said, you're in a prison saying, yes, I'm fine. You know, when you pull you up from dunking your head in the water, I'm happy. This place is not a happy place. Prabhupada said, if you're in the material world, it means suffering. He said, in happiness, he said, enjoyment is a misconception. Prabhupada's words were always so beautiful, the words he would choose, how he would say things. He said, the idea of pleasure is a misconception. Yes? At that time, I was temple president in Hawaii, and we were very isolated, Hawaii in particular, from the whole rest of the world. And is what I remember at that time is the energy, the momentum that Prabhupada had created in the society was so great that even with his disappearance, it just, like the fan, you know, even if the plug is pulled out, it is spinning so quickly for so long. So the same thing was there. Even though Prabhupada had disappeared, he had given us so much and told us so much and stressed to perform devotional service. And everyone was engaged full time in devotional service, and I think it just carried us for quite a long time. I know myself, I found it difficult to do my service. And I left the presidency about 6 months later to my good friend Satyadev, who was at the temple. He was temple commander. And we reversed roles. I told him he should be temple president, and I became temple commander. But it's the only thing to hold on to is service to the spiritual master. That's all there is. And it's actually the only relief. And it's the salve for all the difficulties here within this world, in this body. It's the ointment that actually soothes us and makes us feel better in devotional service. Just like here, talking about Srila Prabhupada and his presence, you can feel his presence, you know, and everything is okay. So by being engaged in devotional service, then one can feel peaceful. And one understands that your spiritual master is there. As Prabhupada would always say, my spiritual master is always with me. One of the things that was said about Srila Prabhupada, when we went to Mayapur, I remember the first time we went to Mayapur in the car with Srila Prabhupada, and we drove right by Sri Chaitanya Math, where his Srila Prabhupada Samadhi was, his spiritual master Samadhi. And as we were going by, Prabhupada said, stop. And they stopped the car. Prabhupada didn't even get out of the car. He just folded his hands and closed his eyes. And then he said, okay. And then we went on. And that was one of the criticisms I was talking in class the other night, his godbrother saying he was speaking all this nonsense. Well, that was one of the things that he said, was your godbrothers criticize you because you don't even stop to see your spiritual master. It is Samadhi. And Prabhupada pounded the desk. He said, I'm always with my spiritual master. And you know, it's not about the bells and lamps. Prabhupada was constantly with his spiritual master, engaged in devotional service. He didn't need to make a show one day a year, stopping and offer obeisances somewhere. He was always engaged in doing what his spiritual master wanted. So his presence was there constantly. So that's what we have to do. We have to be engaged constantly. And then we can be happy, understand our spiritual master is right here. Yes.
Mm. expose this confusion about devotional dreams. One thing is for shamans or shalapa or devotees. How would you advise to deal with them?
Yeah, that's a good question about the dreams, how we can see dreams and whether we should think what kind of reality is there or not. as far as the dreams go, Prabhupada said they're very nice. He said, of course, if they're based on Shastra, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then you can accept them as an instruction. There's no harm in accepting such, just like that instruction, accept all invitations to travel and preach. Who's going to say, well, that's, you know, Prabhupada wouldn't say that. You know, he would tell you to do something, you know. You better go to a nice tropical place. You're ill. Relax. Get healthy, you know. Go in the water. He said, travel and preach. It was like so what Prabhupada would do. So, if it's something that's in line with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and one's enlivened by it, then, I mean, in my travels, I've had devotees tell me, you know, second generation, we would say, disciples of Prabhupada's disciples, who Prabhupada's appeared to them in dreams and directed them, you know, to Krishna consciousness. Even they've never. They didn't know anything about Srila Prabhupada. You know, they didn't know it was Prabhupada until they wound up in a temple. So it seems like it was Srila Prabhupada. Myself, I've had dreams, and then I've had dreams, like really intense dreams. It didn't seem like dreams. And so both have been there. But the one time, twice I had an occasion where I just saw Prabhupada. And when I saw him, in my dream, I thought, Prabhupada's here. He's come back. I know he's left. It was in my dream, but he's come. So I immediately felt that. But it was very simple. I just fell at his feet. He was standing, and I fell at his feet in my hands, and I could. My tears were on his feet, and he just patted me on the head, and he said, "Don't worry, everything will be all right." And then a few years later, and it was over 10 years ago, about 15 years ago, I had another dream. And it was the same. Prabhupada appeared and I just fell down immediately. It was very effulgent. And I fell at his feet, did a dandavat, and I looked up. And he just looked down at me and he said, "Take a stand." And of course, I immediately woke up. And I said to my wife, I said, "I just saw Prabhupada. And he told me to take a stand." She said, "What stand?" I said, "I don't know." He didn't say. And that was it. So that was, again, one of those directions. So that's what I've been trying to do. This stand, my stand, is for Srila Prabhupada himself, within our society, and just the importance of Prabhupada always within this ISKCON society. Like he said, this society is its body. And this is actually his vapu. This, he said, "It's my body. ISKCON is my body." And he said, "My disciples," he said, "you're all the limbs of my body." And he said, "If you don't cooperate," he said, "then my life is useless." So this is what we have to learn how to do within this ISKCON society. Understand this is Prabhupada's. It's Prabhupada. ISKCON is Srila Prabhupada. And we're all part of Srila Prabhupada. We're all part of Prabhupada's body. And just like the universal form is described in Bhagavad Gita, we're all part of Srila Prabhupada. So the more we can understand that and work together and try to serve him in his mission, which is spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, then Prabhupada will be happy and we'll also be happy. This is our way to be happy. So whether it's a dream, not a dream, it's there. All these things are there in reality. Prabhupada said these things. Okay, I think it's time for stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.